Well, hello. Matt Brackenin. I just spent the last week in South Florida in Pompano Beach, which, compared to how it was in the 80s, Pompano Beach is just amazing now. It kind of reminds me of Fort Lauderdale in the good old days. Anyway, I'm back at home base and ready to do the next hour. Going to talk about Iran, what else, some, but maybe with a little bit of a different emphasis instead of just following, you know, the daily, what's Iran doing, what's Trump doing. I want to put it into a larger context of what's happening to the American military and really the American economy, the American culture overall. Because I think that we're not just on the verge of losing the war in Iran. I think that we're losing out completely. You know, the American unipolar moment, which began with the fall of the Soviet Union, what a squandered opportunity. We literally grabbed the piggy bank and just thought we could live off it forever, just as the kings of the world. Never mind preparing for the next century. And I don't know if they got the pictures that I sent in there, but we've really gone into this war with an obsolete military. And if you can put up the that first one that shows the four panes, the 21st century versus the 20th. I don't know if you have those available, but our military was set up to win third world brush wars in the 20th century. That's what it was great at. We could drive right up to the coast of Libya. We could drive right up to the coast of Yugoslavia, and we could exert our will by just having aircraft flying from nearby bases like in Italy or from our aircraft carriers, and nobody could do anything about it. Even the 1991 Desert Storm War, where we pushed Iraq out of Kuwait, we spent 6 months loading war material in Saudi Arabia and bringing in Marines and soldiers for almost a year before we went into Kuwait in Desert Storm. That era is as obsolete as that 19th century cavalry picture up there. If you sent the 19th century cavalry against those World War I tanks, they would be massacred. And that's obvious to everybody now. That's clear. Nobody can, you know, nobody would even think about disputing that. But the difference between our 20th century air warfare and what Iran has prepared is just as big of a difference. Our air power depends on this choreography of attack planes and air refuelers, all of which have to be parked on concrete runways and aprons. They can't just be pushed off in the desert somewhere, like one of those mothball air fleets in Arizona. They have to be on concrete, which means a very limited number of runways. Well, in the first part of this war, we've been pushed. Our air forces have been pushed out of their bases close to Iran, you know, in Kuwait, in United Arab Emirates, and even in Saudi Arabia. Our planes have been attacked. Now they're bunched up in a limited number of bases in Jordan and Israel. And if Trump decides to go for one more big air war, it's going to be an absolute disaster for the United States. People will mark this as the end and the defeat of 20th century warfare compared to the modern 21st century war that Iran has been preparing and building for decades and decades. Now, we're going to talk about this some more on the other side of the top of the hour when we come back after this break. So if you don't support the InfoWars store, goodbye, InfoWars. And I'll see you again. You'll have me for the rest of the hour. Matt Bracken, that's me.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but minbenzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776RX.health.
The program leftists failed to silence. It's the Alex Jones Show.
All right, I'm back. I'm sorry if I sound black-pilled. I am in the sense that we went into the wrong war with the wrong military, suited for the last century, not this century. And I hope that people are finally getting through to Trump that further escalation of this is not going to work for us. It's definitely not. Now, apparently he listens to these Fox News generals all the time, former generals Keene and Kellogg, who seem to be trapped in a time warp back around 1992, when the U.S. could just bring ships into the Persian Gulf, unload tanks, artillery, troops, anything that they wanted, no limit, just bring it on into the Persian Gulf. And then what happened? A rocket revolution happened. Things that we could do even a decade ago, we can't do anymore. People should have been learning this from the Ukraine-Russia war. This is now where you can't even send tanks forward. A tank is a dead duck in the Ukraine-Russia war, anywhere near the forward lines. It'll be destroyed by drone swarms immediately. Troops can't even go out in squad strength. They'll be spotted by their signatures day or night and attacked with drones. Troops have to dash out in twos and threes and hope to make it to cover and not be seen by drones. So that the idea that we're going to be able to launch new big air attacks on Iran is just insane at this point. It's totally insane. So I don't understand the thinking of these Fox News generals that are still pushing for taking out so-called Pickaxe Mountain or landing troops on Karg Island. I don't understand how they can be so oblivious to what's been happening in military technology and military operations in the last decade. It just blows my mind. And it makes me really wonder about our planners when we've created a system of multi-million dollar, single-use standoff weapons, both interceptors and offensive weapons, $1, $2, $3, $4 million a shot. And now we've depleted them, maybe more than half, our defensive and offensive high-tech weapons. They're gone in this period of time, just the last 5 months, gone. Depleted to the point where we can't even threaten Iran seriously now, much less be able to take on China or Russia. So maybe it's a blessing in disguise, this war, because it might inoculate us from the absolute madness of trying to go to war with China or Russia, because we can't even handle Iran. And people will say, Matt, that's because we just haven't taken the gloves off. You still hear people using this expression, finish the job, like just a few more bombing runs and the Iranians are going to surrender. Okay, if you put up at number three, the one with the B-52 on it, that's the next thing I want to talk about is to compare the Iran war to end the technology to the Vietnam War and the technology that was available then. And at that time, stick that up if you can get number three. But in that time, we could fly over Vietnam backwards and forwards unlimited B-52 strikes, iron bombs dropping straight down from the sky, you know, from 35,000 feet up. We dropped more tons of bombs on little South Vietnam and North Vietnam than we did on all of German-occupied Europe during World War II. Three times more. We could fly from Thailand to Guam, back and forth, Thailand, Guam, Thailand, Guam, raining bombs down on Vietnam. They couldn't fire up at us from in the south. The Viet Cong had nothing. We could just fly at will, dropping any tonnage of bombs we wanted straight down. That was true carpet bombing, where the craters are intersecting, front and back, side by side, with airplanes, you know, next to each other, all to cut off South Vietnam from being resupplied from China and Russia down the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which ran parallel to South Vietnam in Laos and Cambodia. We had almost a decade to try to accomplish this mission. Unlimited B-52 raids, arc light strikes. You know, Hanoi, yeah, we had some shot down. We had POWs. It wasn't enough to stop us from just bombing at will North and South Vietnam. They didn't surrender. Iran is 10 times bigger than South Vietnam, and they can shoot back. We can't fly over Iran today. We have to have our planes take off now from Jordan or Israel. If they were going to attack, they have to take off from Jordan or Israel, fly towards Iran. It's so far, they have to refuel with those big tankers, those old, like, based on, believe it or not, 707s, most of them, the KC-135s. They have to refuel in mid-flight just to approach Iran to launch a multi-million dollar standoff weapon to fire into Iran, which will drop one bomb on one target. Then that attack jet has to turn around, refuel again, and land back in Jordan or Israel. Folks, this is as obsolete in 2026 as that horse cavalry. It's totally obsolete. So when people are saying finish the job, we haven't even scratched Iran. Compared to what we did to South Vietnam, we haven't scratched Iran. We're hitting the same bridges, and they repair them. All their real targets are under these granite mountains in these missile cities, hundreds of feet under granite, built to withstand tactical nuclear weapons. So the idea that a few more weeks of bombing is going to change anything in Iran is a total joke. Iran is massive. If we run out of standoff weapons, which we're on the verge of doing, then we have to fly attack jets right over Iran. That means we're going to lose a lot of pilots. Is in Vietnam, it was very, the whole Vietnam country is very narrow, okay? So it was very close to the ocean. So when pilots were shot down, we had a real good shot at scooping them up with our rescue forces, you know, with the Air Force PJs and other teams. That's not going to be the case in Iran. Iran is so much bigger. It's hundreds and hundreds of kilometers inside of Iran where our attack planes will have to go when we run out of standoff weapons, which we're on the verge of doing. So, yeah, pretty much forget about any more big air attacks. So when you see the Fox News generals talking about this stuff, I think that they're just talking right out their ass. I don't understand it. It's very hard for me to comprehend how they can be so dumb. Unless maybe they're just on, you know, corporate boards that are paying them to say these things. Because for sure, it's great times if you're Boeing or Lockheed Martin, it's great. Trump has said, oh, I want plans in 3 weeks for how we're going to, you know, ramp up production enormously. Well, you can't. These aren't artillery shells. We're not talking about combat boots. We're talking about super, super high-tech weapons that cost millions of dollars a shot. In fact, I did a little research. To drop a pound of high explosive from an iron bomb like the B-52 compared to dropping the same pound of high explosive from a Tomahawk or a JASSM, it's like 500 times more expensive with the new standoff weapon to get one warhead onto one target is like 500 times more expensive than it was when we could just fly over Vietnam raining iron bombs vertically straight down. No country can afford that. We built a military that was based on being able to slap around countries like Libya and Yugoslavia. It was not a country or a war plan that could sustain itself. It worked in 1991 because the Iranian Scuds, they had some, were so inaccurate that we didn't really have to worry too much about them. We could just pile up military gear, tanks, personnel in a few bases in Saudi Arabia for months, just cities of troops, just, warehouses and docks and pavement areas just loaded with pallets of shells. Today, those would be the easiest and first targets taken out. And we're coming to grips with that. If you can put up that map, it's the looming air battle. That's number two. This shows, in one picture, the problem that we're facing. Our bases for our aircraft are now so far away, it not only increases the flight time that they're in the air that they need to refuel at least once going in and coming out, but it also means they're not dispersed. They're on like a half dozen air bases, maybe a few more, because these aren't off-road vehicles. You don't park them on the sand. They have to be on concrete. So now all of these hundreds and hundreds of aircraft are stacked wingtip to wingtip in these known locations. I'm not giving away any secrets. It's 2026. The Chinese and the Russians sit with the Iranians and go over the latest satellite pictures. They know the minute that a C-17 lands what's unloading from it. They know what it is. And in the cell phone era, you can't keep a secret. If you have all these aircraft landing at some remote airbase, a guy in a taxi cab, an Uber, a local vendor, a guy that just lives there, he pulls out his phone and he takes pictures and uploads them. And in this era also, you can't really hide the bomb damage. We were talking about in Jordan taking away the phones from our troops so that they wouldn't reveal, that they were being struck. Well, it doesn't matter because civilians that are outside of the airfield taking pictures at the same time from different directions makes geolocation completely, simple today. There's no way to keep these things secret. Our 19th century horse cavalry is, over there in Jordan and Israel, and Iran's modern missile military is inside of Granite Mountains. If we tried to do a big air raid now, another 40-day war, not only would we run out of these standoff weapons, and everybody knows we're running out, as soon as the first waves of refuelers took off, these airfields could be struck with missiles that only take 10 minutes to get there. So when the first, the first 10 or 20% of the aircraft are airborne, their airfields would be hit with these Iranian missiles, many of which are designed specifically for airfields packed with aircraft because they have these submunitions, people call them cluster munitions, where the warhead coming down splits into up to 80 submunitions to spread out like a shotgun. Because the reason this is important, aircraft parked on the ground are very vulnerable. It doesn't take much to disable an aircraft. If you bump into an aircraft, if you the slightest accident, they have to put the aircraft down and really analyze it to make sure everything is fine. If you have fragments of concrete flying all over the place, even the aircraft that aren't directly hit, the aircraft are very likely to have warning lights going off all over the place because one little electrical wire bundle, hydraulic line, or control cable is damaged, the aircraft can't fly. So as soon as the first quarter of our aircraft are in the air, Iran would hit the airfields, and that would pretty much scupper the rest of the attack. The aircraft that were in the air might not be able to return to that airfield if it's cratered and pitted. So they'd have to go to other airfields, maybe in neutral countries, where they wouldn't be able to just refuel and rearm for the next sortie. So as bad as it looks for us, being in a position where we can't even go back into the Persian Gulf now. Remember, before February 28th, the U.S. Navy had its bases in the Persian Gulf, right across from Iran. This had so many important aspects. For example, our Navy ships could provision with fresh food that would be flown in on transport planes, commercial and military, and then taken out to our ships, which were very nearby. Now our ships don't have access to those bases. They're stuck out in the Indian Ocean, 10,000 miles from home, where there are no friendly ports. What, are they going to go to Liberty in Somalia? I mean, they're just stuck on these steel boxes for months and months at a time, with the morale going down as they're jammed together, with their food supplies getting, to the bottom of the pantry. The stuff that they would have thrown out normally is what our sailors are being fed. So you can see all of these consequences of losing these bases. The first thing that the Iranians did back in March was take out the long-range radar and the giant satellite uplinks. Well, those were destroyed, meaning that the warning time for our forces back in Jordan and Israel are cut. But it also means we may never be able to come back into those bases. Those big projects require coming in on a ship. These aren't things that you can put on an aircraft. You don't rebuild a base with supplies brought in on an aircraft. It has to come in on a ship. Well, the Iranians are never going to let our ships back in. This has just been a complete, utter failure, a real disaster. And unfortunately, there's no way we can escalate our way out of this. Our escalations will just make it worse for us. So I'm, in a sense, glad that this happened with Iran, because it's going to inoculate us from any concept of being able to come to the defense of Asia. If you can stick up, it's number 8. It's like a big whole map of Iran, China, everything. This map shows the range of Iran's just intermediate range ballistic missiles. These are can go out 1,000 kilometers. That covers all of Israel. That means our Navy ships have to be very careful inside of that red line. But look at the same concept around Asia. China's missiles are twice the range of those Iranian missiles. China's missiles can go all the way out covering all of the Philippines. That can cover easily Guam. They have a class of missiles called the Guam Killer. That's like 2,000 kilometers from China. Our whole war plan is based on, we'll just have our aircraft parked in Guam at Anderson Airfield. We'll just have our B-2s and our B-52s. They'll just be able to launch there. And our destroyers can go back to Guam and have new missiles put on them. Our destroyers can't reload at sea. They have to go back to a friendly port, and they use cranes to put those missiles in. It takes like a week. They can't. Where are they going to go back to if Guam is plastered with Chinese missiles? So maybe this is a good thing, because it's exposing that we showed up to the 21st century with a 20th century military. It's just completely inadequate for what's going on. We're being shown to the world essentially to be a paper tiger. Yeah, it was great when our enemies were on the level of Libya. Or, Syria, just fire in some tomahawks, everything's good. And then we get to go on TV and brag about how we have the finest military in the world. But if you look at the Ukraine-Russia war, I don't think we have any kind of a military that could withstand that. The revolution in military affairs, from the little quad-rotor drones up to these, intermediate and medium-range ballistic missiles, they're conventional warheads. But now when you combine precision and mass, meaning they're not something that's like plus or minus a kilometer anymore. These things are like, 10 meter accuracy. And the Iranians now have a set of missiles that are even better than what the Russians are using, better than the Oreshniks. They have a missile called the Fatah, which has a new idea, which is a booster in the warhead, so that when it's on reentry to its final target, when it's coming down, it's going over 4 kilometers a second. I've learned this from watching the MIT professor Ted Postol on lots of different shows. But a warhead coming down, think of it, 4 kilometers a second, way faster than a rifle bullet. That's like a rifle bullet is like a airsoft gun compared to that. And the interceptors that we have to fire up at them are going 1 to 1.5 kilometers a second. That means their closing rate together in the last second, 1 second, is covering more than 5 kilometers of the interceptor going up and the warhead coming down. And according to Dr. Postol, our Patriots have been a big con job, a sales job, claiming a 90% success rate. When you study the videos, which you can do now, because it's, they're filmed from every angle, you can analyze it, the rate is less than 10%. The Patriots and Thads have basically been a psyop, a morale booster. It's a way of saying, don't worry, it's okay, we have interceptors. This would be like giving police bulletproof vests that really weren't bulletproof. It's great in peacetime if nobody is shooting at you. But in a real war, it's exposed that everything from the Desert Storm era in 91 until today, the Patriots haven't worked. So in a sense, it's irrelevant how many we can build in the next year or 2 years. They don't work. You're trying to shoot a bullet with a bullet. The bullet, the ballistic missile coming down, is always going to have a tremendous advantage over an interceptor that's trying to hit a bullet with a bullet at a closing rate of 5 kilometers a second. And now the Iranians not only have the booster on the reentry warhead, they have control mechanisms, fins, and little rockets to make the thing maneuver as it's coming down. So the interceptor, which is depending on a pure ballistic flight, a mathematical analysis that can take place in seconds and then launch and hit a warhead in the last second before it hits the ground, but the warhead maneuvers and the interceptor has zero chance. I mean, this is what we're up against now. We went to war with an obsolete military. The Iranians completely outclassed us in technology. They were ready for this war, and we're not. And I'm going to finish up on this subject and get to another one in the next segment when we come back. Thanks. Thanks for hanging in there with me.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out at the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones, and the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan, in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us, and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market, and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Tired of gas prices? Tired of the war? Come see it. Introducing Trump Cruise to Hormuz. We got Mar-a-Lago face paves, Kid Rock, YMCA, but not gay, McDonald's 24/7. Nobody's done that on a boat. It's safe, it's beautiful, and kids eat free. Now look, the war costs every family $1,000. You're already paying. So for $4,000 more, you're on the boat. Call in the next 10 minutes. We'll throw in a second week. Nobody's leaving anyway. Great deal. Call now.
Total conflict cost estimated $600 million. Cruise fare non-refundable. In the event of escalation, entertainment schedule continues as planned. Strait conditions may vary.
Thanks. Yeah, those are my novels in the back of my top of my Twitter. You know, before I finish up on just the Iran war part of this, I want to mention, in two ways, I want to mention the troops. The soldiers that are at these forward bases and the Marines and sailors that are out on the ships, nobody thought that this would just go on, you know, for 5-6 months. Some of the ships have rotated in. Obviously, the troops have rotated in and out. But they're still in a really rough situation. Normally when in a war we would talk about a ratio of KIA to WIA of 3 or 4 to 1. In this war, they're saying that there's only like in the low teens of killed in action, but hundreds are wounded. The only way I make sense of this is by discussing what's called blast injury. Sometimes it's blended in with what they call traumatic brain injury. A lot of the troops that have been injured, it's my opinion, we'll find this out in the coming months and years, they weren't hit by a fragment, you know, that would cause a wound like a something piercing their body or amputating a limb. They have a minute or 2 minutes warning. They can get behind a blast barrier, but they're not in true bunkers like with pressure doors. They're just on the other side of a concrete barrier or sandbag barriers. That does not protect you from a blast wave. So if a blast wave is causing an overpressure that can just, you know, gut out the middle of buildings, that blast wave is going to cause permanent injuries to the people that are even like behind a, you know, concrete barrier. They're going to have, in many cases, permanent personality changes. So your happy-go-lucky spouse comes back a different person, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, or they may have lifelong balance issues, cognitive issues, memory issues. And this is going to be one of those subtle things for the VA to deal with, because anybody that can say, I was on such and such base when a missile hit, will be able to say to the VA, oh, I need help for whatever springs up 5 years from now. And it will. I think that this is going to be in the case of Vietnam, the Agent Orange, or in the case of Desert Storm, the Gulf War syndrome, you know, the poison gas from the burn pits, things like that, the noxious fumes that people are exposed to. I think that we're going to be finding out over the coming, months and years about all of these blast injuries. And it's a spectrum. You may be 1,000 yards from it, or you may be 20 yards from this hit. So surviving it can be very different. The consequences can be very different. But that's the only way I can understand, you know, only a few killed, but hundreds having to be evacuated, you know, to the hospitals in Germany. So I think there's a big opening for any honest, hardworking reporters out there to get to some of these people. I'm sure that they're being told shut up about it, but by now, a lot of them have to be home. They're not all going to be reporting back for duty if they've got traumatic brain injury and blast injuries, you know, organ damage. So I wish some reporters would get on this story. It makes me wonder, you know, why they're not. And out on the ships, people probably have a hard time, I think, understanding how tight the living conditions are on these ships, especially for the Marines, but sailors too. They're on bunks three high. So one guy's down at ankle level, one guy's at crotch level, and one guy's at his bunk is at like shoulder level. And there's a meter, about a yard, between the bunks on one side and the other of a berthing compartment. So these six guys are changing, you know, bare ass naked in front of each other for 6 months. It's not good for morale. I mean, yeah, you can make jokes about it and everything, but I'll just give you a comparison. My father-in-law was on Iwo Jima. He landed on the first day. But a month before that, he was in Hawaii with like world-class rest and recreation. You know, when you can imagine what Hawaii was like in the 40s. It was a lot of fun for sailors and Marines on shore leave. And then when he wasn't on shore leave, they were doing training, practicing hitting beaches, getting in and out of boats, you know, shooting at the range. A month later, not 8 months or 10 months, 1 month later, he's on Iwo Jima for a month. But there wasn't just such a long period of time of not knowing what's going to happen, of being penned up like, if you ever passed on the highway, one of these trucks carrying sheep, where they're just like, you can't imagine you can fit one more sheep or one more chicken into that truck. That's how our sailors and Marines are living. And they've scraped the bottom of the pantry. You know, they're eating the stuff that would have been thrown overboard in any other time. And I'm not blaming the Navy, but we used to have bases in the Persian Gulf. They used to be able to just provision readily. Now they're out in the Indian Ocean. It's all hostile territory. So give a thought to the condition of our troops that are out there. It's got to totally suck, I can tell you. It's not like you're cruising around the Med. You know, every 2 weeks you're going to spend a few days in Naples or Rota, Spain, or in Athens, Greece, or Haifa, Israel. It's not like that at all. You're just in that steel box for month after month while the food gets worse and worse. And I think that another casualty of this stupid war is going to be retention and reenlistment, because the sailors and Marines are going to get off that ship and say, I'm done. Never again. Not doing it. And who can blame them? Now, I'm going to slightly pivot a little bit. If you can put up the map number 5, which like shows the different sea routes, something that's also just starting to get into the news a little bit, you know, if your antenna are pricked up for this, they're talking now about Chinese and Russian ships going over the top of Russia to get from Asia to Europe. Now, that map right there is a Mercator projection, so it's kind of distorted towards the top. It's square instead of tapered in. But if you read the numbers, that northern route is way shorter than the Suez route, and it's much, much shorter than the Cape Hope route. So in this war where the Houthis are blocking the bottom of the Red Sea, the Suez Canal can also, if this war gets out of control, the Suez Canal can also very easily be blocked. The Iranians, we think it was, could have been the Houthis, fired a drone about a week ago at a Egyptian LNG facility. It's like a ship that's permanently docked that receives LNG from a ship that goes port to port and then converts it back to gas and puts it into Egypt's gas pipeline system. Well, a drone flew into that as just a warning shot, not a kill shot. Just a drone in the superstructure, they put the fire out fairly easily. But it was a warning that we can hit you all the way from Iran or from Yemen. And if they have the accuracy, which they've demonstrated, to put missile warheads into individual buildings, which they have done, they can sink a ship in the Suez Canal anytime they want. Because a ship that's moving only, you know, under 10 miles an hour in a straight line is about as easy as a stationary target to hit because it's so predictable. The flight time of the missile is like 8 minutes. So it's not a hard math calculation. So the Suez Canal gets blocked. The Houthis continue to block the Red Sea, or they clamp down much more than they are now. Then you've got to go all the way around Africa to get from Europe to Asia. Or you can take that Russian route on the top, which is a big shortcut. And why am I bringing this up? If you can put up number 7, the picture of that ship. The Russians have built an entire class of these, what they call super icebreakers. These are nuclear powered, so they're never going to get stuck in the ice and run out of fuel, right? I mean, they could just sit there for years. They're massive, so that they make a channel 50 meters wide. The ship itself is like 35 meters wide, but it cuts a path right through thick Arctic ice that's enough for a 50-meter-wide ship to follow it, which is a ship in like the 100,000-ton class, serious merchant class size. Not like this, we're not talking like Great Lakes stuff. We're talking ocean-going ship size. They have a whole class of these. I think they've got like 6 in use now, and they're building more. They're going to keep this northern route open almost year-round. And this means friends of Russia will get the shortcut. So who cares? What's the big deal, Matt? Okay, so we have to go around Africa. Well, it adds a huge amount to the cost of shipping. If you're a friend of Russia, and you have to be a friend of Russia, because this route takes you right through Russian territory. There are big islands up above Siberia that are Russian, and this route goes right through there. So it's only friends of Russia that are going to use this shortcut from Asia to Africa. Already, South Korea has built ships to use this route and smaller LNG ships without the bulbous bow, which obviously won't work in ice. That's the regular ship has that thing sticking out in front, the bulbous bow. So they build ships just for the Arctic route, and it's only going to be for friends of Russia. So look at how the Asian countries, our allies, like Taiwan, Japan, Korea, are getting squeezed. You want to stick with the losing team, the team that can't even handle Iran, the team whose bases are being pushed far away from Iran, or do you want to get on the team that's China, Russia, Iran, and you'll be able to use that northern route. You'll be able to get LNG from up there or take that shortcut to Asia. You know, it's a question of loyalty. Well, you saw that map I put up with the ranges of the missiles. If you're Japan, you have to be thinking, America can't even defend, you know, the Gulf states against Iran. How is America going to defend Japan or Taiwan or the Philippines against China? Can't do it. Might love you guys, love it, but we can't stay with you because your military has proven that it can't win against even Iran. So we're going to have to go with the winning team, which looks like it's going to be China and Russia. And that's just how, you know, there, it's not that we don't love you, but we have to take care of our own country. And your missiles that can't even defend the Gulf states certainly can't defend us from China. So Taiwan, Vietnam, the Philippines, Japan, Korea, they're all going to have to just be realistic about their interests. And to use that northern route, they're going to have to be friends with Russia. Another aspect of this is that the Russian Arctic, Siberia, the top of Russia, they've done extensive surveys. They know about tremendous mineral wealth that's up there, you know, and gas and oil fields. They know it's there. They've done the surveys, but it's been out of reach. You can, you know, it's very difficult building railroads across some of this wild Arctic regions, huge mountains like in Kamchatka, just, you know, like Alaska level mountains, permafrost, rivers that are frozen most of the time, so you can't really use them for much shipping. But if suddenly this northern Siberia coast is open year round, they're going to build these mega projects to exploit this untapped mineral wealth and gas and oil. And you know who's going to pay for it? China. China is also building icebreakers to go along with Russia's icebreakers. Because this is, you know, the future is in the Arctic. And meanwhile, what's America doing? We're getting ready to buy some icebreakers from Finland. Freaking Finland. We can't even, and the icebreaker that Finland is going to sell us is like half the size of that Russian nuclear icebreaker. Half the size. It's like a glorified Great Lakes icebreaker. So it can't open up the Canadian Arctic to do anything useful with it compared to what the Russians are going to be able to bring in terms of merchant ships passing from Europe to Asia and in terms of building, you know, new construction projects to take out that mineral wealth. And why am I saying this? You won't see this in American media because it's all like, oh, we got the greatest military. You know, we're the exceptional nation. We're the superpower. The world is passing us by. If you look at the number of engineers and STEM graduates that Iran, Russia, and China are graduating every year, it's putting us way in the distance, way in the distance. The world is passing us by. You know, we're leading in things like military spending, but in terms of what we're getting for it, we bought a gold-plated, obsolete 20th century military with it that can't sustain even a war against Iran. And the modern world invested in missiles and icebreakers and these giant projects, pipelines, railroads, you know, a railroad from Iran to China. There are gas pipelines connecting Russia to China now. We blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. America did, I'm convinced, to cut Europe off from the inexpensive Russian gas. So yay us, we did that. Well, guess where the cheap Russian gas is going now? To Chinese factories on pipelines. So I don't know how to wake up you know, our politicians. I think that it's maybe a hopeless cause. I mean, we've got Mitch McConnell. Nobody knows if he's alive or dead. I mean, it's literally weekend at Bernie's and how they're running the Congress. It's just so that they can push these bills through, like the bill joining the American and Israeli militaries and intelligence arms, fusing them together, you know, things like that. I'm pretty pessimistic right now at this point, I've got to tell you. I mean, I don't see a happy way out of this, but you know, Americans just want to hear good news, wave the flag, everything's great. Or maybe it's like, okay, well, now it's the $20 burrito, you're just spoiled and lazy. So we're kind of getting to the point of just fighting generation to generation, culture to culture, race to race in our own country. And meanwhile, other countries are forging ahead. I think Europe and America are on a real poor trajectory at this point. It kind of reminds me of the end of the British Empire, you know, when they were coasting on fumes for decades and decades into the 20th century. They once had the greatest navy in the world. And after World War II, they had pretty much hocked and sold their colonial possessions. The Suez Crisis in the 50s with them in France, that was sort of their Iran war moment when they were revealed to be third-rate powers, which is sort of what's happening to America right now, for the whole world to see. But Britain was fortunate because they could just pass the baton to their cousins from across the pond, America. So we could take over for Britain in the middle of the 20th century. But I don't know who we're going to pass the baton to, because I think the baton is going to be held by China and Russia, and they'll be allied with Iran. And, you know, that whole network will be connected with railroads. They won't even need to ship that much around, you know, around the Suez Canal. They'll just put it on a train from Moscow to Tehran to Beijing. Will just be a train ride, one train after the other. And I wish I had happier news, but I think we've got the wrong people in charge. And when you put on Fox News and it's still like Fantasy Island with these generals that haven't woken up, that it's not 1991 anymore, that we're like out of ideas, out of ammunition, out of technology. Anyway, so also something else to keep your eye on is in Ireland. I don't know this. I've been seeing this for a couple of months, little leaks about a thing called the new IRA. It's a total op. It's a total false flag discrediting op. When you see it, know what it is. It's a completely bogus thing. The last thing anybody in Ireland would do in terms of making a group that was against mass immigration into Ireland is call it the new IRA. It's the last thing. Number one, it immediately alienates all the Protestants in Ireland, north and south, obviously mostly in the north. They're automatically against it. It would be like somebody in America coming up with the idea for an anti-immigration group and calling it the new KKK. It's just toxic. Any group that was legit about anti-immigration, the last thing they're going to do is put on black balaclavas, you know, with a tricolor behind them and guns on a table and declare that they're the new IRA. This is absolutely a discrediting op. It's designed to lure people in, to get them to sign up for, you know, less toxic websites that are related, to collect information on people. It's designed to make anybody in Ireland who is against mass immigration appear to be linked to a terrorist group. Don't fall for it. The video that they put out a couple months ago with the guns on the table, my friends and I, we recognize the guns. Those are training guns used by, you know, by British in Ireland to train people on foreign weapons. It's like a G3? Are you serious? The new IRA has got, you know, like MP5 and G3 laying on the table. I mean, are you serious? It's a complete false flag. Don't go for it. I'm not saying, you know, that there won't be some group. I'm writing a book about it at the time, about future events in Ireland. But don't for a minute fall for this new IRA thing. And the way that it just exploded over this weekend, you know, it would be like you never heard of the new KKK, but suddenly it's on every channel, you know, with guys in masks threatening to kill migrants. It's completely bogus. So don't fall for it. All right. In the time I've got, you know, I sell my books. That's how I make a living, some of it. And my first and my last book, Enemies Foreign and Domestic. Some people, I've got new followers. They've never heard of me, never seen me. Yes, my books are on Kindle and Audible on Amazon. You can get them there, but I almost have to pay Amazon now for books that I send them. It's such a joke. But I do sell them myself, and if you like the sound of my voice, I don't know why you would. You can get my books on Amazon, Audible, and Kindle. And pretty soon I should have a new book, at least out on Kindle. But I don't know when I'll be on again. I hope that wiser minds in the Pentagon and the White House can get to President Trump and convince him this war was a mistake. It is a mistake. But the only thing that can make it worse is to launch another wave of attacks. It's best right now to just back away, pretend that the strait opened on itself, remove the U.S. secondary blockade, don't announce it, just slowly fade it into the background, take credit for more ships coming out, say Trump's great strategy worked, and then we'll all just pretend that this never happened. We'll just put it down the memory hole. But if the morons like Keane and Kellogg can convince Trump to go for another round of bombing, I think it's going to be a total disaster. It's going to everything that's happened before now will be like nothing compared to what happens next. Okay, I'm pretty much wrung out. It's you don't know how hard it is to sit here for one solid hour looking at a camera. It's nice having guests, let me tell you. So I watch a lot of podcasts, and it's pretty tough doing this solo. Adios.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, has been very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.